The bride's name was Jessica, and now it was her family's turn to say a few words at the wedding reception. The other family had already gone and done a nice job with the toasting, saying toast like you've heard before. Remember when, or we wish you all the best, or welcome to our family. Now it was Jessica's aunt who took the microphone the DJ had provided, and she paused a bit. Then she said her opening sentence, and I wish she hadn't. It startled me. Here's what she said. When you think about Jessica, it's easy to see all the things she doesn't have. The whole crowd inhaled and held it. The aunt then continued. It's true. There's a lot she doesn't have that life didn't give her. What she does have, said the aunt, is all of you. I knew the story behind the story. Jessica's parents were alcoholics, and they died young. Then her loving grandmother took her in for a time, but then she died. And then one of the aunts took her in. To say she's been through a lot, to say she's an overcomer, to say it's a miracle that she made it through is an understatement. That's what the aunt had in her mind. Sometimes life isn't fair, is it? Sometimes life leaves you like it left Jessica, empty-handed, hurting, like it left Naomi, this poor woman who was a migrant because of a famine and then went to a foreign land and then had her husband and then both sons die. Hers was a life defined by failure and loss and emptiness, all that she didn't have. Life means that you and I will go through hardships. And if you haven't, just keep living. Jesus doesn't say, if the waters rise and flood, and if the winds blow and destroy. He says, when? When, be ready. Build your life on a solid rock. Naomi's family experienced what first-generation immigrant families today face. They're looking for a better life, but they encounter famine and poverty and suffering and violence and loss and pain. The whole reason she leaves her country is to get a better life, and in the process of that journey, she experiences all the things she's trying to avoid. The question for Naomi, the question for us, is not how do you avoid hardship? You know what the real question is? How do you get through it? How do you endure it to a better, more hopeful future? There's somebody in this church whom you love, who in wisdom told me about having to bury a young adult daughter of his in Florida. And he said, you know, Ollie, in a situation like that, about your only friend is time. To everything there is a season. That's what Ecclesiastes says. A time for this, a time for that. There's a time for every matter under heaven. I don't think that it's time that heals, but I think that it's God who heals in time. The loss never goes away. But with time, the loss is not the only thing that defines you, right? The suffering becomes a part of you, deepens your character and maturity, your faith, your perspective, but your suffering does not control you in time with God's blessing. You'll recall the risen Christ. I think it's so interesting in John's gospel when Jesus shows up to the disciples risen from the dead. Do you remember what he looks like? He shows them his pierced hands. He shows them his pierced side. Whatever John is trying to tell us, he's telling us that the victorious life giver is always the crucified one. That is always a part of who he is. Though it no longer is the only word about him, we see him always as the one crucified, but we know him always from the perspective of the empty tomb. Well, in Naomi's case here, as we meet her today, not much time has passed since her son's death, and she's feeling empty-handed. She's feeling that God is not an advocate or a strength or a help in her life, but a foe. She tells the Moabite daughters-in-law that the best thing they can do is get away from me. I'm bad luck. You have no future with me. Go back to your gods. Go back to your people. Flee from me because God has turned against me. Orpah concedes, not Ruth. Not Ruth. That's why the book's named after Ruth. Ruth says, I'm sticking with you. No matter what. When you look to Jess, the aunt said at the wedding reception, it's easy to see all that she doesn't have. She doesn't have a father, she doesn't have a mother, she doesn't have a grandparent, she doesn't have a sibling. But look what she does have. She has all of you. One of God's greatest gifts is supportive community. Is the blessing of loved ones, is a friend. Do you know, I didn't know this. We're always learning new things, right? I'm studying for this passage this week. I come across in a commentary the meaning of the name of Ruth. I never knew this. Ruth in the Hebrew means friend. And that's all Naomi has. But if you read forward, and we'll come back to this book next week, it's enough. Ruth is an unlikely heroine for sure, as a widow, as a foreign woman from an enemy empire, Moab. Ruth is a strange and unpredictable heroine. But through Ruth, Naomi will again have children in her arms. Through Ruth, King David would be born, a great grandson. Through Ruth, Jesus the Christ would descend. Check out Matthew 1:5. Naomi doesn't protest the promise. Naomi goes home because she's heard there's food again back in Israel. Ruth is in tow. And when she comes back to the city, Beverly read it, the women in the town say, look, Naomi's come back. But she says, I'm no longer Naomi. I'm a different person completely because of what I've been through. My name is now bitterness. Call me Mara. It is the Lord who has done this to me, she says. I don't know if you've been there in life. When you're running on empty, when you've suffered and your resources are depleted and you've given up with little to look forward to. And not only that, she has a spiritual crisis, and she blames God for all of her misfortune. I can't blame Naomi, who cries out, why, Lord, why have you done this to me? That's what so many of the Psalms say. When an infant is stillborn or an infant dies at a young age, hospitals and nurses try to support the parents who are grieving with some resources, some help, because this is such an earth-shattering experience. And one of those booklets they give out is titled, Hello Means Goodbye. And here's the advice. The best care we can give you, grieving parents, is not to protect you from the pain, but to support you as you go through it. The function of friends, it says in another place, is to be a sounding board for your grief. And on the last page, as you look at the bottom of a little baby's feet that are wrinkly and cuddly and cute, it says this, our joys will be greater, our love will be deeper, our life will be fuller because of you. It doesn't take the suffering away. doesn't say the pain and the loss never happened. It just says going through that offers you deeper, more mature, fuller living going forward. Some say it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, but Naomi doesn't buy that. At least not yet, Naomi doesn't buy it. Naomi says, I am done. I have nothing left. My well is dry. I am alone. I am hopeless. I am bitter. And it's God who has forsaken me. I don't believe that. I don't believe God is to blame. I understand that Naomi is naming God as the culprit here, but that's not my faith. I don't believe that any more than I believe God wanted those Jews to be murdered in Pittsburgh at the synagogue, any more than I think God is ordering the deaths of young people by opioid, any more than I think God was killing off Bosnians and Sudanese and those democratic protesters in Tiananmen Square. God is not killing people in Syria. God does not send hurricanes and earthquakes to maim and destroy. That is not what I believe. I believe God's on the side of life. God is with those who suffer, not the cause of suffering. God is with those who grieve, not the cause of death. God is with the sick, not the cause of illness. Why do I believe that? I look to Jesus, and I always see Jesus calling forth life and healing and welcoming the outcast and opening the eyes of the blind and helping the lame to walk. I see Jesus feeding the hungry and giving something to drink to the thirsty. I see Jesus always bringing life and peace and joy. One of our longtime and beloved church members who died recently was Libby Masters. And with her husband Bill's permission, I want to tell you something that Bill shared with me after Libby's death. Those of you who are able to come to her service know what I didn't until she died, and that is she was born in the middle of the Great Depression in a small town in the Tennessee mountains, and her mother died while in childbirth. Libby was only two and a half years old at the time, and she was taken in by an aunt who saved her life. Her brother from the military service sent home some of his pay, and that aunt and some others in town helped her get to college and pay for college. And that's where she met Bill, and the rest is history, and we share that history. But I want to tell you what Bill shared with me that I hadn't been able to get off my mind. He said it really helps him to get through this difficult time. He said, it helps me to picture Libby in heaven getting acquainted with her mother again. You know, she hadn't seen her since she was two. And then he said, it also helps me to think, yeah, I miss her terribly. And this is quite a separation. But doesn't God promise us a glad reunion? And this is just a short time of separation. And that's going to be a long time of being reunited. There are times when, because of life, we run on empty. You're not the first one that's encountered it. You won't be the last. Let's learn from those who have gone through it before us and not give up. And with God's help and the passing of time, with the love of friends, trust that there will come a time again when our emptiness turns to fullness, our darkness to light, our loneliness to community. Let us trust that God is at work, promising us not just a good future, but a glorious one. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.